share, he knows, alone knows. In the limelight. Former US President Donald Trump hasn't been interviewed on Rupert Murdoch's Fox News for more than 100 days, and other Republicans often get the attention that Donald Trump once received. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Jeremy Peters. The piece is titled, Fox News, Once Home to Trump, Now Often Ignores Him. It has been more than 100 days since Donald Trump was interviewed on Fox News. The network, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch and boosted Mr. Trump's ascension from real estate developer and reality television star to the White House, is now often bypassing him in favor of showcasing other Republicans. In the former president's view, according to two people who have spoken to him recently, Fox News's ignoring him is an affront far worse than running stories and commentary that he has complained are too negative. The network is effectively displacing him from his favorite spot, the center of the news cycle. On 22nd of July, as Donald Trump was rallying supporters in Arizona and teasing the possibility of running for president in 2024, saying, "We may have to do it again," Fox News chose not to show the event. The same approach it has taken for nearly all of its rallies this year. Instead, the network aired Laura Ingraham's interview with a possible rival for the 2024 Republican nomination, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. It was the first of two primetime interviews that Fox News Channel aired with Ron DeSantis in the span of 5 days. He appeared on Tucker Carlson's show shortly after talking to Laura Ingraham. When Donald Trump spoke to a gathering of conservatives in Washington this week, Fox News did not air the speech. It instead showed a few clips after he was done speaking. That same day, it did broadcast live, for 17 minutes, a speech by former Vice President Mike Pence. Donald Trump has complained recently to aides that even Sean Hannity, his friend of 20 years, doesn't seem to be paying him much attention anymore, one person who spoke to him recalled. The snubs are not coincidental, according to several people close to Rupert Murdoch's Fox Corporation, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the company's operations. This month, the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal, both of them owned by Rupert Murdoch, published blistering editorials about Donald Trump's actions concerning the 6th of January 2021 riot on the Capitol. The skepticism towards Donald Trump extends to the highest levels of the company, according to two people with knowledge of the thinking of Rupert Murdoch, the chairman, and his son, Lachlan Murdoch, the chief executive. It also reflects concerns that Republicans in Washington, like Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the minority leader in the Senate, have expressed to the Murdochs about the potential harm that Donald Trump could cause to the Republican Party's chances in the upcoming elections, especially its odds of taking control of the Senate. The Murdochs' discomfort with Donald Trump stems from his refusal to accept his election loss, according to two people familiar with those conversations, and is generally in sync with the views of Republicans like Mitch McConnell, who mostly supported the former president, but long ago said the election was settled and condemned Donald Trump's efforts to overturn it. One person familiar with the Murdochs' thinking said they remained insistent that Fox News had made the right call when its decision desk projected that Joseph R. Biden would win Arizona just after 11 p.m. on the night of the election, a move that infuriated Donald Trump and short-circuited his attempt to prematurely declare victory. This person said Lachlan Murdoch had privately described the decision desk call, which came days before other networks concluded that Donald Trump had lost the state of Arizona, as something only that Fox had the courage and science to do. Some of the people acknowledged that Fox's current approach to Mr. Trump could be temporary. If Donald Trump announces he's running for president or he's indicted, he will warrant more coverage, they said. A spokesman for Mitch McConnell declined to comment. A spokesman for the Fox Corporation also declined to comment, as did a spokeswoman for Donald Trump. The relationship between Donald Trump and the Murdoch media empire has long been complicated. An arrangement of mutual convenience and mistrust that has had sensational ups and downs since Donald Trump first talked himself onto the gossip pages of the New York Post in the 1980s. But the spat between the former president and the media baron, who has helped set the Republican Party's agenda for decades, is occurring in a much larger and more fragmented media landscape, as new personalities and platforms make it much harder for any one outlet to change the narrative. Donald Trump's allies in the corners of the conservative media that are more loyal to him, including Breitbart, Newsmax, and Talk Radio, are already seizing on the turn inside Fox News as evidence of a betrayal. Donald Trump appears willing to fight. He blasted Fox and Friends this week on his social media service, Truth Social, for being terrible and having gone to the dark side after one of his hosts had mentioned that Ron DeSantis had beat Donald Trump in two recent opinion polls of a hypothetical 2024 Republican primary contest. Then, offering no evidence, he blamed Paul Ryan, the former Republican Speaker of the House, with whom he often clashed. Paul Ryan sits on the Fox Corporation's board of directors. The New York Post was often on Mr. Trump's side in its editorials when he was president, but it occasionally went against him, like when Donald Trump refused to concede the election in 2020 and the paper's front page headlines blared, "Mr. President, stop this insanity." Donald Trump found a home on Fox News when the network's founder, Roger Ailes, gave him a weekly slot on Fox and Friends in 2011. Mr. Trump used the platform to connect with the budding Tea Party movement as he thrashed establishment Republicans like Paul Ryan and spread a lie about the authenticity of President Barack Obama's birth certificate. Initially, neither Roger Ailes nor Rupert Murdoch thought of Donald Trump as a serious presidential candidate. Roger Ailes told colleagues at the time that he thought Donald Trump was using his 2016 campaign to get a better deal with NBC, which broadcast The Apprentice, according to Insurgency, this reporter's account of Mr. Trump's rise in the GOP. And when Ivanka Trump told Rupert Murdoch over lunch in 2015 that her father intended to run for president, Rupert Murdoch reportedly did not even look up from his soup, according to The Devil's Bargain by Joshua Green. But as Mr. Trump became bigger than any one news outlet and bigger than even his own political party, he was able to turn the tables and rally his supporters against Fox News or any other outlet he felt was too critical of him. He regularly used Twitter to attack Fox personalities like Megyn Kelly, Charles Krauthammer, and Karl Rove. The network could always be critical of him in its news coverage, but now the skepticism comes through louder. In asides from news anchors, in interviews with voters, or in opinion articles for other Murdoch-owned media properties. Referring to the congressional investigation into the 6th of January attack, the Fox anchor Brett Baier said it had made Donald Trump look horrific by detailing how it had taken 187 minutes for him to be persuaded to say anything publicly about the riot. One recent segment on FoxNews.com featured interviews with Trump supporters who were overwhelmingly unenthusiastic about a possible third campaign, saying that they thought his time has passed, and that he was a little too polarizing. Then they offered their thoughts on who should replace Donald Trump on the ticket. Unanimously, they named Ron DeSantis. I spent 11 years at Fox, and I know nothing. Pre-taped hits a Fox screen that hasn't been signed off on and sanctioned at the very top levels of management, said Eric Bolling, a former Fox News host who is now with Newsmax, especially when it has to do with a presidential election. There can be no denying that Fox News remains Fox News. Viewers in recent weeks have seen occasionally critical coverage of Donald Trump, but unlike other news networks, Fox has chosen to air its own primetime programming rather than the hearings of the committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham dismissed the hearings as a show trial. They are lying, and we are not going to help them do it, Tucker Carlson has said. What we will do instead is to try to tell you the truth. The network has aired the January 6th committee hearings during the day, when far fewer viewers are tuning in. But other segments during the daytime and even evening play up violent crime in Democratic-run cities, or Joe Biden's verbal and physical stumbles. As the government announced that a key indicator of economic health declined last quarter, the headline Fox scrawled across the screen read, "Biden denies recession as U.S. enters recession." On 13th of April this year, Donald Trump called into Sean Hannity's show and ran through a list of crises he claimed would not be happening had we won this election, which we did. He hasn't been interviewed on the Fox News Network ever since.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIV English Radio. A very warm welcome to your own program, Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we try to discuss problems, questions, and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. Today in the studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Sheikh Miqdad, who is a researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much, and salam to all the listeners, inshallah, out there.
Well, brother, we talked about a few very important things in our previous sessions, like what could we do to help boys go through puberty. Some of them were like, we should know as parents what kind of friends our child is having or what kind of friends he is hanging around with, so that, because you said friends do have impact on intellectual and emotional maturity, rather physical maturity as well. And you also talked about choosing school, and it's not only about selecting a good school, it's also about being aware, not keeping your kid outside from 8 to 3 or 9 to 5 and then not knowing anything about it. Making very safe environments for our children. What else could parents do to help their boys go through puberty?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We talked about in the causes of puberty and what leads to physical puberty happening earlier. We talked about exposure, and then in the practical things to do, we talked about how to create a safe haven and how to kind of limit their exposure to sexual content too early on. Other things that we can mention to help emotional and intellectual maturity, and we'll come back to this physical aspect as well after in a bit. I'd like to mention a few points since we talked about animations and movies. Kind of the amount of TV and the amount of animations and films and movies that children watch, we should be careful of that as well.
Okay.
Because if you remember, we talked about how because of children being exposed to the world of fantasy and the world of imagination so much.
Yes.
In
they don't less know about the real world.
Exactly. Being less impacted by the real world. This is something we can control. Obviously, it's very difficult in today's world. But it's something that we can at least limit to some extent.
Okay.
Again, I emphasize, and I've said it many times before as well, that we're not talking about kind of throwing the TV out of the window. It's not going to happen, right? Children are going to watch TV. Children are going to be part of the media world. The point is two things. One is to limit it, right?
Okay.
So the amount of movies and animations that they're watching, we should be careful. It shouldn't be like 2-3 animations a day, or even one animation a day is sometimes even too much. But also, and more importantly, is to always have a discussion about it, right? One of the main things about this is to bring it over the dinner table and discuss about it.
Okay.
And always bridge it back to the real world. See, children who watch animations in an uncontrollable way, without discussing about it, they're constantly in that same fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is like limit it, number one. Also, obviously,
very
carefully select which one that they're watching.
Okay.
And then discuss it, as you said. So discussing means what? Like, today you watched this. What did you learn from it? What did you think was wrong in that movie?
Okay.
What do you think? How do you think it applies to the real world, right? We know what's happening in Palestine. We know what's happening in different parts of the world. You go to school and you know the different interaction between people and teachers and students and between your students. Let's bring it back to the real world.
Okay.
Right? And so when they do this comparison, you're really helping them bridge it back.
Okay.
So they're not living this fantasy world anymore. Sometimes you find that, I might be exaggerating, but when you look at teenagers, they're in a different world.
Yes,
right?
They are.
They're in a completely different world. The way they dress, the way they talk, and it all comes from this animation world.
Of course.
And sometimes you want to wake them and shake them and say, wake up, like we're living in a world over here. So very important that if they are watching animations, bridge it back.
Bridge it back.
What do you learn from this animation? What was the key point? You'll find that many times animations have one or two key messages.
Mm-hmm.
What message was in this animation?
And what was wrong with
it? What was wrong with it,
yeah.
Right? Did it apply without Islamic principles, or was it going against our Islamic principles?
And so on. Brother, I'll be talking to you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIV English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about things parents could do to help boys go through puberty. Yes, brother.
So very importantly, have this analysis about movies happening, movies or animations happening very early.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say to this extent that even talk about it from a movie analysis perspective, right? Or animation analysis, but how was the graphics, for example?
Mm-hmm.
What would the graphics would have changed? Kind of remind them that this was just an animation. You know, sometimes I've tried this with my 7-year-old as well. They don't realize that this was actually a thing that a person has imagined himself and created in their minds.
Yes.
Right? You know, sometimes I remember this conversation I had with my child. This is very young. I'm not comparing. We're talking about teenagers. But still, they were discussing about how if Superman and Batman, or was it Superman and Spider-Man, would ever fight, who would win?
Okay.
And I was trying to explain to them that the answer to this question is, whoever you want. If I'm the designer of this animation where Superman and Spider-Man will fight, I'll decide what they want. And obviously, he's very young, but it was difficult for him to understand that. What do you mean? Like, it depends on how strong Superman is and how strong Spider-Man is. And I was trying to explain to him, no, these are not real individuals. They're cartoons in the world of fantasy. And the person behind it that has kind of given them the powers. If he wants tomorrow, Superman could win the battle. I'm like,
yes.
Wow, do you mean Superman Superman could lose the battle?
Yes.
He's like, what do you mean Superman can never lose a battle? No, he can. I mean, it's the guy who's making the movies deciding who wins and who loses.
And that shows how much children are into the fantasy world.
Exactly. So we need to come back to that. So even having discussion about the graphics behind it and say, okay, the person who made this movie, maybe you could have made this part differently.
Mm-hmm.
Just this kind of conversation helps a child to realize, oh yeah, you're right. This is actually a movie that was made by a real person.
Okay.
And he was actually had an idea in his mind that he actually sat behind the computer and kind of designed it and based a storyline based on that. Just
True.
This fact brings him back to the real world.
Yes.
So having this conversation is very important. I remember we went to a youth organization over here, and one of the things that they were doing, and they were kind of really encouraging, is for children to make their own animations and their own video games as well.
Okay.
And that's a very good idea as well, because obviously the skill is also a very interesting skill to have, and a very important skill to have. But what it does is that it brings about the real world impact into them. They realize that, okay, I made it myself. I made a fantasy world myself, so I know I'm the real person behind. And that's something I can do whatever I want to do with. If I want to make it nice, I can make it nice. I can destroy the good person if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
This really kind of brings them out of the fantasy world. And this brings about emotional maturity, intellectual maturity to a very high extent.
Okay. So the thing that we can do over here to get them back out of the fantasy world is to do an analysis of the movies, whatever animations they are watching. We can ask them what it was, what was wrong with it, what how do you connect that to the real life and all. So we can ask them all these questions, analyze those movies, and then make them constantly realize. You even said that we should discuss that on the dinner table, so that we can constantly make them realize one or the other way that fantasy world is really different from the real world. I'll be talking to you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, and we are talking how boys can go through the age of puberty. Yes, brother. You were talking about things parents can do to help their boys go through puberty.
So we talked about animations. Just a couple of points I'd like to add over here. Bring it to a close, and shall we can move on to another tip as well. First point is that, as we said, it's very impossible in today's world to completely switch off from it. But be very selective in what we watch.
Okay.
Selective in not just sexual content as well. Remember we talked about intellectual and emotional maturity, but also exposure to religious content as well. Exposure to or awareness about our Islamic principles and being kind of in touch with the Quran and the Hadith, etc.
You know, even I personally, or when I realized that, when I read out some Hadith today and I realize I wish I had known this like way back, my life would have been pretty different. It would not have been like that. So yes, exposure to religious content is also important.
Yeah. So when you're selecting an animation or a movie for children to watch, sexual content definitely should be there as a factor whether you can decide whether it's a good movie or not. But also other things are also very important, right? So some of the movies, for example, are very much against Islamic ideologies,
mm-hmm.
right? So for example, movies that promote, for example, mockery of religion, right? Or
yes.
mockery of religious personalities,
mm-hmm.
or even to the extent mockery of God, for example, right?
Yeah.
You have certain movies that kind of are based on the principle of Mahdawiyat, for example, of the 12th Imam in a mockery way, for example.
Okay.
Or, for example, other prophets, so Prophet Isa or Prophet Musa, for example, but in a very...
they mock them.
Mocking them, or even kind of putting across the idea that these individuals were not prophets, or these individuals were not what they were to say, or kind of having a different ideas about them. Or, for example, promoting homosexuality, for example, or promoting... things that are against Islamic principles. We have to be aware of this.
Yes.
If your child does watch these things, again, I emphasize, bring it back to the discussion table, right? We always have discussion about things. And this is where parents should be well-equipped to have this discussion with their children, with their teenagers,
mm-hmm.
right? To build that understanding, say, okay, what does Islam say about these things? And what did this movie say? And how we can kind of bring it together and discuss it. Be very kind of... focused on criticizing, on discussing it in a critical way, saying this is not the way we think. Whatever you saw was not what Islam says about.
And back your answers with reasons.
And exactly, and have your answers, have your reasons. So,
yeah.
And this is really something that will bring about this emotional, intellectual maturity, and it will help them
to grow brother. Will help them to have, you know, have a strong faith as well.
Exactly. And in places where you don't know, okay, it's an
mm-hmm.
opportunity for more research. Tell
yeah.
them, okay, even I as your parent, as your father or your mother, I don't know as well. How about for tomorrow we research? Let's go ask a scholar. Let's go read a few books. Let's go find out. So it becomes a family research kind of thing about religious principles. And it's a good thing, right? There's something that brings about this.
So that way it will not only help the child to strengthen his faith, it will also help parents. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIV English Radio. This was Islamic Upbringing. In case you have any questions for us, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, fi aman Allah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In the United States, a massive $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit by a voting machine company over Fox News election lies got a whole lot more serious last month when a judge ruled the action can proceed in a scathing ruling against media magnate Rupert Murdoch and his son. The article you're about to hear has been written by Huffington Post journalist Mary Papenfoss. The article was published by Huffington Post and is titled Fox News Potentially Facing Major Financial Damage in Dogged Suit Over Election Lies. A massive $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit by a voting machine company over Fox News election lies got a whole lot more serious last month when a judge ruled the action can proceed in a scathing ruling against media magnate Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan. Dominion Voting Systems was given the green light in June to proceed in its lawsuit against both Fox News and Fox Corporation, its parent company, by Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric M. Davis. Judge Davis determined that it was a reasonable inference that Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan Murdoch either knew outright that Dominion had not manipulated the election or recklessly disregarded the truth when Fox disseminated lies initially launched by Donald Trump. Conservative news outlets, OAN and Newsmax, have also been sued by Dominion for defamation for $1.6 billion each. Dominion has a very strong case against Fox News. Chiara Torres-Spelisky, a constitutional law professor at Florida Stetson University and fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, told The Guardian. All of the conspiracy theories about Dominion's machines were just pure bunk, she added. The Fox News Channel, as a news organization, should have known that and not given this aspect of Donald Trump's big lie a megaphone. What's particularly bad for Fox, she noted, is that Dominion asked the network to stop disseminating the lies and correct the record. Yet Fox persisted in spreading misrepresentations about the voting machine company. A particularly intriguing development could be the exposure of text and email messages among the Trump White House, Fox News personalities, and even Rupert Murdoch himself. I think once you start to pull the discovery material, what you're going to find is there was a lot of communication between the Trump people, both internally and externally, about pushing very specific lies and narratives. Angelo Carissoni, chief executive of Media Matters for America, told The Guardian. A Fox News Channel spokesman told the newspaper, "We are confident we will prevail in this case, as the First Amendment is the foundation of our democracy and freedom of press must be protected." Delaware judge on Thursday, 21st of July, denied Newsmax's motion to dismiss a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit filed by Dominion Voting Systems alleging the network's reporting about the voting software company following the 2020 presidential election was false. Judge Eric M. Davis of the Superior Court of Delaware ruled Dominion at this stage has a case for defamation and allowed the company's lawsuit to advance. The complaint supports the reasonable inference that Newsmax either knew its statements about Dominion's role in the election fraud were false or had a high degree of awareness that they were false, Judge Eric Davis wrote in his decision. The judge also said Newsmax continued pushing election fraud claims even though the network knew the allegations were probably false. Newsmax possessed countervailing evidence of election fraud from the Department of Justice, election experts, and Dominion at the time it had been making its statements, Judge Davis wrote. Dominion sued Newsmax Media Incorporated on 9th of August 2021 for $1.6 billion, arguing the right-wing media company deliberately made false statements about the 2020 presidential election and Dominion voting machines. On the same day, Dominion filed two additional defamation lawsuits against One American News Network, OAN, and former Overstock.com chief executive officer Patrick Byrne. Newsmax told Huffington Post it was not surprised by last Thursday's ruling. The same judge ruled in December of 2021 that Dominion's $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against Fox News could proceed. We are not surprised by the judge's decision, as this was a preliminary motion and he made a very similar ruling in the Fox News case, the company said in a statement. Newsmax reported on both sides in the election dispute without making any claim about the results, other than saying they were legal and final. We are confident that Newsmax will ultimately prevail given the strong First Amendment protections provided to ensure free speech and a free press, the statement continued.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You are listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today, we are going to talk about the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Now, before anything, I would like to send my sincere condolences to all of you for the entrance of the month of Muharram. Now, today, we're going to talk about the lifestyle of Imam Hussein, as I said. And as an introduction into us knowing the personality of Imam Hussein, we are going to speak about a few things. Now, to start with, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the greatest personality who has made all historical events of humanity everlasting. He is among those great personages who gave shape to social civilization and principles that form the basis of a life of culture. So Imam Hussein is indeed someone who really need to be looked at historically. We cannot ignore the fact that the period, the era that Imam Hussein lived in is among the best era for us to study from, for us to understand from. Imam Hussein has given so many examples on how we can be good leaders, good people, how we can be good family members to our fathers, to our mothers, to our sons, to our daughters, and anyone else in the family. Imam Hussein is indeed an example to be followed.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu ala
Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Suleiman, and we've been talking about the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Now, we've been trying to explain who Imam Hussein is and how such a good example he is to us. Now, Imam and the leader of nobles, who is also considered as the leader of nobles, he is the most prominent individual to have shown miracles in the field of life and led the caravan of humanity like to destination and gave movement to their aspirations. He, Imam Hussein, has guided so many people towards a moderate society, a society where equality is given an importance, a society whereby equality is such a thing that everyone should live with, should understand. So Imam Hussein gave this society equality and this particular attribute so that all the people, no matter the levels they are living in, low or high, rich or poor, may benefit from it. Now, Imam struggled more than any other reformer. He bestowed and offered sacrifice because he took along with himself the people of his family and his companions so that he may sacrifice himself and them so that in every place in the East or in any other place in the world, the command of Quran and the heavenly justice is established. And because of this, he had no other aim except the removal of oppression, the removal of destruction, of injustice, the removal of any typical of injustice that was available at his time, and established a just government. So Imam Hussein was like among the best pillars that lived during that era. He was a pillar of justice. He was a pillar of correction. He was a pillar of good deeds. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Inshallah, we'll see you in the next episode. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. At deep silence, feel the air.
In the limelight. If all Greenland's ice melts, it would raise the seas by more than 24 feet, says Juan Kohlreiter in an article published under the heading, Greenland loses 6 billion tons of ice in 3 days, harbinger of unprecedented coastal flooding. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Both CNN and The Independent reported this week on a massive ice melt in Greenland, with on the order of 6 billion tons of ice lost in 3 days. The melting was because of a heat wave at the top of the world caused by burning coal, gasoline, and methane gas, and is spewing billions of tons of the dangerous heat-trapping gas carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. These sorts of events are directly responsible for sea level rise and coastal flooding around the world and in the United States, which has a lot of coast if you think about it. Often it is the poorest and most disadvantaged who will suffer most severely from disruptions like storm surges, coastal erosion, saltwater invasion of lagoons, and urban flooding. A heat wave in Greenland only makes it about 60 degrees Fahrenheit, when most of Americans would still feel the need for a sweater. But ordinarily, according to a climate and weather site, in July, the average maximum daytime temperatures are cold and range from 6 degrees Celsius in Kap Tobin to 10 degrees Celsius in Angamagsalik. Nighttime temperatures generally drop to 2 degrees Celsius in this region and 0 degrees Celsius in Kap Tobin. It is one of the warmest months of the year. So yeah, 60 Fahrenheit or 15 Celsius is a stretch. Loss of 6 billion tons of ice is worrisome, especially since all this is cumulative. Over time, all the surface ice will melt if we go on burning fossil fuels. But we've seen considerably worse, say Marsh and Fritz researchers. In 2019, they explain a hot spring and summer melted away the ice sheet's surface, sending 532 billion tons of ice into the oceans, raising them permanently by 1.5 millimeters. If all Greenland's ice melts, it would raise the seas by more than 24 feet. We can still halt an apocalyptic scenario like that, which would wipe out coastal cities around the world if we stop spewing out carbon by 2050. The existing CO2 in the atmosphere will all go into the oceans. That will make them acidic and wipe out a lot of marine life, but temperatures would immediately stop rising and would gradually go back to a 19th century normal. Average sea level has already risen about 9 inches since 1880, which has put coastal regions and cities under pressure. It doesn't sound like much, but it is a lot. It gets magnified if there is a storm surge and worsens flooding. Moreover, the oceans are not flat. They are higher in some places than others, and some parts rise faster than others. The ocean at Miami Beach is a full foot higher now than even in 1990, and floods and rain-free sunny days are four times more frequent than just three decades ago. The World Economic Forum found that African American urban communities are most at risk from sea level rise, with the risk of flooding in their neighborhoods increasing by 20% by 2050. Flooding currently costs the U.S. $32 billion a year, but that number is expected to increase substantially if the seas rise at a rapid clip. We are seeing increasing coastal flooding alerts in places like Maine. Sarah Long at WMTW quotes meteorologist Donnie Dormont, "It makes sense we have more advisories just due to the fact that we are getting more coastal flood impacts. Sea level rise is not showing a super rapid increase, but it is constant. Every single year, we get a couple of millimeters, and you add that up over a decade, and you're just getting more coastal flooding than you used to. Note that a 10 millimeter increase per decade is nearly half an inch. But as we saw in Miami Beach, at other places, the increases are more dramatic." In Ghana, the Atlantic Ocean has already surged 6 feet into the country's interior, threatening to wipe out a whole series of coastal settlements. The erosion is accelerating, and the new conditions can interfere with fishing. People's livelihoods are in danger.
Thank you. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. God says that if you are grateful, He will certainly give you more. In another, he says, And if you are ungrateful, my chastisement is truly severe. Quran is full of divine traditions. I said this that from the beginning of the Quran to the end of the Quran, as you can see, the divine traditions are continuously being explained and repeated. They have been mentioned in different places in the Quran, such has been the course of Allah, and that has indeed run before. And you shall not find a change in Allah's course. The Holy Quran, Surah 48, verse 23. There are four or five such cases where God says the divine traditions are immutable. This is because the divine laws are perfect laws. God is not family with anyone. To say that we are Muslims, we are Shia, and we are the Islamic Republic, so we can do whatever we want, is not right. We are no different from anyone else. If we put ourselves in the situation of those first kind of traditions, the results will be that. If we put ourselves in the situation of the second kind of traditions, the results will be this. This is definite.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In the year 1981, in the face of all these events and all these severe attacks, we were able to stand on our own feet and frustrate the enemy. And we were able to do this today too. God, in the year 2022, is the same God he was in 1981. God is the same in different times of difficulty and at all times. And all the divine traditions remain in place. Let us try to put ourselves in the situation of the divine traditions for progress. God is the same in times of difficulty and at all times. Now, let's talk about the issues relating to the judiciary. Mr. Mohseni presented a good report. Let me mention some of these points that I wrote down. He told us in his report that this and that has been done. I would like to say this again. The judiciary is like the other executive branches. Because one of the fundamental pillars in the country is the judiciary. Not just in our own country, this is true everywhere. Your successes and failures are both doomed to the rulings of the divine traditions, and they affect the whole country.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. Gave me hope, oh Allah, I want to thank you, I want to
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
France continues to be at the forefront of the West's effort to whitewash Saudi autocrat Mohammed bin Salman, who even Western leaders believe was behind the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. After the murder, French President Emmanuel Macron was the first Western leader to visit the House of Saud last December, and now he has rolled out the red carpet for the Crown Prince's first visit to Europe. Human rights groups and leftist politicians strongly criticized Macron's decision, just as they criticized his legitimizing embrace in 2020 of Libyan warlord Khalifa Haftar and Egyptian military dictator Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, as well as Macron's enormous arms sales to Arab monarchs for their brutal war against Yemen. Already tenuous claims to support human rights in the Middle East have become increasingly irrelevant to Western leaders as their sanctions campaign against Russia has dramatically backfired against their own economies. Energy prices have soared in Europe, causing record inflation, and energy outages loom this winter. At the beginning of the year, France's annual economic growth rate was expected to be 4%. The government has already slashed that prediction almost in half, and it could fall even further.
The great revolution linked to Ukraine and the Russian sanctions is that if you're a purchaser of oil instead of a producer of oil, then you're going to view bilateral relations in a strictly economic manner in order to ensure your future supplies. This is going to change relations with many countries, such as Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Algeria, the UAE, and others.
Just a week ago, Macron received the head of the United Arab Emirates, signing a strategic agreement to cooperate in the energy sector. The Paris visit by the de facto Saudi ruler comes 2 weeks after a visit to Riyadh by United States President Joe Biden, who backtracked on his promise to make Saudi Arabia a pariah state because of the Khashoggi murder.
When it comes to the level of output, only Saudi Arabia has the ability to raise oil and gas production. Europe cannot turn to Russia anymore, and nor can they reliably turn to the US, where fracked shale gas has been a total failure. In a global climate of recession and inflation, we see no hesitation to protect energy deliveries.
Analysts say that the West is calling in their longtime support of brutal absolute monarchies and dictatorships in the Middle East, demanding that they direct their oil and gas supplies towards Europe amid the unrest in Ukraine. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Up to a quarter of the EU's electricity demand is generated using gas. In some of the bloc's member states, it is higher. As less of it arrives from Russia, EU nations have agreed to reduce gas consumption by 15% until spring.
I think at the end, everybody understands that this sacrifice is necessary. We have to, and we will share the pain.
Many in the European Parliament say the pain is not being shared equally.
Only working